From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
I was able to get people to buy into the fact that, look, I don't know how to be a black mayor. I do know how to be a really good mayor. And if I'm a really good mayor, we'll all be proud of the fact that I was one of the first, you know, the first blacks to hold that. But I also, John, like to use it as an opportunity to educate people. And I do. I always remember my father's wisdom that it wasn't just important to be the first, but don't be the last. But him also trying to help me and Sandra and Connie and Lee understand that so much of our being the first was just an accident of history, because of the fact we happen to be these first generation beneficiaries of the civil rights. So I love reminding people that Tom Bradley, Willie Brown, Maynard Jackson, and Emmanuel Cleaver were all either born in or near Dallas. And Tom Bradley was born in Calvert, Texas, left here because of Jim Crow and segregation, and went to California, and as you know, became an Olympic hero and the first black mayor of Los Angeles, California. Maynard Jackson was actually born in Dallas, Texas. His grandfather founded New Hope Baptist Church. They were run out of Dallas by the Klan.
The Honorable Ron Kirk, former U.S. Trade Ambassador and Dallas, Texas Mayor, and Senior of Counsel in Gibson Dunn Crutcher, LLP. In 1994, Kirk worked for then-Texas Governor Ann Richards as Secretary of State of Texas. The following year, he ran for mayor of Dallas. With support from the Dallas Citizens Association and influential members of the city's African-American community, Kirk was successful in his bid and became the first African-American mayor of Dallas, Texas. During his tenure as mayor, Kirk earned the reputation of being a coalition builder. In 1999, he was re-elected as mayor in a landslide with 74% of the vote. In 2001, Kirk resigned as mayor of Dallas in order to run for the U.S. Senate, facing then-Texas Attorney General John Cornyn. He lost. In 2009, Kirk was nominated to be United States Trade Representative by President Barack Obama and was confirmed by the United States Senate in March of that same year. The Office of USTR is responsible for the development and oversight of U.S. trade policy, including strategy, negotiation, implementation, and enforcement of multilateral, regional, bilateral, and sector-specific trade agreements. I'm Johnny Johansson, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America, and the beginning of our 45th season. On this week's program, U.S. Trade Ambassador and Dallas, Texas Mayor Ron Kirk, In Black America.
60 years ago, Congress made the decision to take the responsibility for negotiating and representing our trade and commercial interests from the State Department and put it in the White House, because businesses and farmers and ranchers wanted someone in government who wasn't thinking about the strategic or the diplomatic consequences of our actions, but only looked after the commercial interest of America's businesses and farmers and their workers. And that was the genesis of the U.S. trade rep. And so I had the privilege, even though I wasn't assigned to a country, of negotiating countries all over the world for greater access for American goods and services, but also defending our rights. And so the two biggest trade initiatives that are under consideration now, and that many of your readers may be hearing about now, I was privileged to launch along with President Obama, and that's the proposed Trans-Pacific Partnership between the United States and 11 other countries in the Asia-Pacific, and the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership between the United States and the European Union.
As the former United States Trade Representative, Ambassador Ron Kirk was a member of President Obama's cabinet and served as the President's principal trade advisor, negotiator, and spokesman on trade issues. Kirk is the first person of African-American descent to hold that position. Kirk has more than 30 years of diverse legislative and economic experience on local, state, and federal levels. As the first African-American mayor of Dallas, Texas from 1995 to 2001, he earned a reputation for bringing together diverse coalitions to get things done. Born and raised in Austin, Texas, Kirk is the son of a postal worker and a public school teacher who were steeped in civil rights activism and Austin politics. He received his Bachelor of Arts degree in Political Science and Sociology from Austin College in Sherman, Texas, and in 1979, he earned his law degree from the University of Texas School of Law. Former Governor Ann Richards appointed him Secretary of State. He served as the legislative aide to U.S. Senator Lloyd Benson, and he was named as chair of the Texas General Service Commission. Also, Kirk served as the City of Dallas Assistant City Attorney.
Well, John, I'm thrilled to join you. You've been a friend for a long time, and can't believe you are celebrating 45 years of doing, you know, the good work that you do here on public radio. So, one, I'm honored to be on with you, but congratulate you and thank you for all you've done.
Well, thank you. Born and raised in Austin, Texas. Tell us, our audience, what was life like growing up in Austin?
Well, you know, because I think I've met you through my sisters and siblings, but, you know, and Austin is a wonderful city, and I love it and still have family there. But Austin was part of the segregated South, and, you know, I guess it was maybe marginally, you know, less hostile than maybe, you know, Mississippi or Alabama, but, you know, I still went to segregated, you know, schools. My brother and sister and I all attended Blackshear Elementary School there on the east side and across the street from Houston Tillotson, which is where I think you went,
right.
What brought you to Austin. And like, you know, most of us of our generation, we grew up firsthand, you know, witnesses and beneficiaries of the whole civil rights movement. You know, my parents, when I look over my career, and you and I were talking off radio, it's remarkable to me that in, you know, one generation, we could go from, you know, all of the rules and all of the customs of Jim Crow, in which people didn't expect a lot, mm-hmm. of young boys who looked like me and you and girls who looked like, you know, our sisters and my parents were not afforded something as simple as the right to vote or attend, you know, public colleges, universities. And, you know, not 20 years later, you know, I'm sworn in as Secretary of State under Ann Richards. So, I mean, Austin was subject to the same stereotypes and customs of the rest of the South.
How did you happen to select Austin College for your undergraduate work?
I wanted to get as far away from the University of Texas as I could. You know, John, at the time when we were growing up, you know, there was a real love-hate relationship between the black community and UT. And I would mm-hmm. say, well, I won't say hate, but there was certainly, you know, not the love of UT that everybody else had, because for so long UT had been segregated. And I just wanted a different experience, and I wanted a liberal arts education. And at the time, Austin College had just a spectacular reputation for being a great liberal arts school. And it just happened that one of my classmates and good friends at Reagan High School, Darwin McKee, mm-hmm. had attended Austin College. And the more that I asked people about it, the more impressed I was by everything I learned. So it was a fabulous experience for me.
Now, Darwin became an attorney and you went to law school. So what sparked that interest in the law?
Well, for me, it went back to the beginning of our conversation. And I know, you know, it may make us seem dirty. I can't speak for Darwin. But, you know, even as a young boy, I was acutely aware that just about everything good happening for people of color, and particularly for black people, was because of this bodacious young lawyer by the name of Thurgood Marshall, who was going into courts all over the South and suing for everything, for the right for us to attend schools, the right to vote. And, you know, by then we'd had Brown versus Board of Education, but Thurgood Marshall, a lot of people don't realize, also, you know, sued the University of Texas 10 years before Brown versus Board of Education. He sued the University of Texas Law School in an important case called Sweat versus Painter that integrated that law school. And one of our East Austin neighbors, Virgil Ott, was one of the first mm-hmm. blacks to attend and graduate from UT. And I very much wanted to be a part of this campaign for social justice. And from, you know, I don't remember what age it was back then, and they may not do that with kids anymore, but, you know, it felt like, you know, in junior high at some point they'd say, what do you want to be? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the sad thing, we had a lot of teachers that just tried to steer us all to careers and, you know, hospitality or construction, and I was like, I'm going to be a lawyer. So for me, it was all having been a witness of my parents' struggle for the God-given dignity that they were given from a legal standpoint, and the knowledge that lawyers played a unique role in making that a reality.
Were there a number of African-Americans in your law class at UT?
You know, by the time I entered the University of Texas, there was. You had had the famous Bakke decision, mm-hmm. and a lot of our white classmates, you know, derisively called us the Bakke babies, but I always felt like I don't give a damn how I got here. I got here, and I tell people, I think if you look at how the work that and the career that I've had, and people like Rodney Ellis and Vonsil Hill and Sam Lindsay, who's now the first, you know, black judge in the Northern District of Texas, and mm-hmm. Orlando Garcia, we've acquitted ourselves well. And if you look at how the levels of achievement among the handful of black and Hispanics that were in my class, I'd say we've outperformed many of our classmates. but we were at least, you know, and I'm sure looking back, people would think that wasn't anything, but it felt like, you know, when I entered the University of Texas Law School at fall of 1976, I think at the time we were the largest, you know, class of African-American and Hispanic students ever.
Now, were you a legislative aide prior to becoming Secretary of State?
Oh, yeah, well before. I worked as I still grew up humble. I grew up in a very strong family there in East Austin. I was blessed to have parents who both worked. My mother was a school teacher. My father worked at the post office, but right. They put four kids through school. I was the youngest one. And, you know, for all of us, work was, you know, just a way of life. Mm-hmm. And so I'd been working since I was 14 years old, and I took any job I could get. And in law school, I clerked, you know, at a small firm there, Broaddus Spivey and Dickey Gregg, but I also worked as a researcher at a group called the House Study Group there in Austin to help pay for my legal education. And when I finished law school, I moved to Dallas in 1979, practiced law for a number of years. You know, I mentioned my friends Rodney Ellis and John Hall, who at the time was a district director for Lloyd Benson, came to me and said, "Hey, Senator Benson is really looking to diversify his staff in Washington." And they encouraged me to look at that. And even though I was still committed to being a lawyer, and I was at that time I had a very active trial lawyer practice, I was also cognizant of the fact that I'd spent my whole career in Texas. I'd gone, you know, from Austin to Sherman and back to Austin and into Dallas, and I thought it wouldn't kill me to see how the rest of the country was. And so I accepted that offer in 1980. I moved to Washington to join the legislative staff of then U.S. Senator Lloyd Benson.
Tell us how you navigated D.C. coming from Austin, which was basically maybe about 45-50.
Oh, Alex, Austin wasn't 45% African American. I don't even think Austin was 10%. You know, it was eye-opening. You know, and I tell people, but that's part of why I encourage young people to travel mm-hmm. and see something different. Because, you know, many of my classmates at the law school, even at Austin College, who had moved from the Northeast, just couldn't fathom how we'd grown up in the segregated South. And right. many of us couldn't comprehend the world in which they were like, "Oh, yeah, we run this stuff." and I remember, you know, it's funny because back then, which now I'm dating myself, I'm not as old as John Hanson, listeners, but I can see him from here. But it's hard for our kids to understand life before the internet and cell phones and any of that stuff. And so I would call home once a month and, you know, talk to my dad and my brother, and I was, you know, mm-hmm. I'm sure it's going to sound politically incorrect, but I sound like that kid in the movie. I said, "I see black people everywhere." But it was refreshing because it, you know, when you, unfortunately, sometimes you grow up in communities in which you're always the only one. You can have that risk, as my father used to warn us again, don't get enamored with being the first and the only one, because, you know, a lot of us belong in that room. You're just privileged to be there. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of refreshing to not always be the only person of color in the room, but to realize there are talented people of all faiths and ethnicities everywhere. And in that sense, Washington was absolutely enchanting and liberating for me.
No, that's right. If you're just joining us, I'm Johnny O. Hanson, Jr., and you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio, and we're speaking with Ambassador Ryan Kirk, former mayor of Dallas, Texas, former Secretary of State of Texas, and a former assistant city attorney in Dallas. Ryan, in 1995, you threw your hat in the ring to become mayor of Dallas. What led you to that decision?
Well, John, by that time, as you mentioned, I had, you know, had a career in law, but then spent some time working in Washington on Senator Benson's staff. And what brought me back to Dallas was the city of Dallas actually recruited me and asked me to come back and help them sort of beef up and run their intergovernmental affairs program. Mm-hmm. So I had spent 6 years in the city attorney's office and then left, gotten married, had a couple of kids. And as you know, our great friend, Ann Richards, who was a wonderful friend and mentor, had become governor of Texas, and it was Governor Richards that appointed me Secretary of State. And during that time, the mayor of Dallas announced he would not run for re-election. And I frankly thought of everything I'd seen and been privileged to do in government, that I'd always said that I thought one of the best jobs in government was to be the mayor of a big city. And, you know, I hope it doesn't sound arrogant, but I looked at that race and that opportunity and thought, you know, if not now, when? And I thought, I can do this. Because I know government, I know the city, I know how government ought to work. And so I put myself forward, and I did something a little bit unusual, because as you know, so many people run for public office disparaging the very institution we're later going to serve. You know, right. You hear, you know, I mean, it just, nothing boils my blood more than people who run for office and say, well, I want you to elect me because I'm not a politician. I don't know anything about X. And then we elect these people and they get into office and absolutely prove that they don't know what the hell they're doing. And we don't understand why government works. And so one of, you know, my arguments was a little bit counterintuitive. And I ran on the basis, you know, that I kind of know what I'm doing. I think I got this. And that I thought that I could kind of help Dallas get beyond so much of what seemingly divided us at the time in terms of ideology and ethnicity, and could work to get us to move together and realize we could do so much more working around common dreams and aspirations. And I was fortunate. You know, it was a race with it was a wide open race. There were 7 candidates, but I was fortunate to win right off the bat with 62% of the vote and won without a runoff.
How did you go about putting your team together?
By then, John, I had lived in Dallas for, I mean, whatever it was, almost 20 years.
Okay.
I'd always been active in the community. I had continued to be active, involved civically. I was a partner at a fairly prominent firm. And, but, you know, and I just reached out to people. You do like, you know, other candidates. In my mind, I saw a path to victory. Mm-hmm. And having spent time as Secretary of State, also studied election patterns. And, you know, the reality is people, we still love to live with stereotypes and shortcuts. And the image of Dallas was nothing like the reality of Dallas. By 1995, Dallas was like every other urban city in America. And while people still thought of it as Southern and conservative, by then Dallas was a city that was 22% African American, 20% Hispanic. We were very progressive. And I thought I could put together a coalition of progressive voters, black and white and brown, around a message that resonated with each of those, that rather than focusing on our differences, you know, I love African proverbs, and I had one that sort of resonated with people that said simply, two people in a burning hut don't have time to argue. And at that time, Dallas was really, really divided. And my basic message was, look, good jobs, safer neighborhoods, better schools, stronger city services, opportunities for everybody is not a black or white or a brown message. That's one we can all rally around. How about if we go to work on those things that we all agree on and quit fighting one another? And, you know, every once in a while you throw something out there and it works.
A lot of people don't know or should know Dallas is situated basically in the middle of the country. So it's a major transportation hub for freight, railroad, and also the airline industry. How, as mayor, you help improve that image that Dallas has?
Well, there were another, you know, a lot. I tell people that there's, and I've attended an incredible session yesterday at the Bush Institute in Dallas with President Bush and President Clinton, who came together to start a presidential leadership scholars program to get a new generation of Americans to think about public service, not only in government, but in business and NGOs. And Mark Cuban spoke, and one of the things you know, that he talked about, and people asked, you know, how do you prepare? What is that to be successful in anything? One, preparation is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you've heard it said before, you know, luck is nothing more than preparation meeting opportunity. And so since, you know, we're doing this 20-year look back, you know, right before I was elected mayor, which was in May, something called NAFTA went into effect. And when I was serving Governor Richards, you know, Governor Richards and Lloyd Benson, all of us fought for the passage of this North American Free Trade Agreement. And when I got elected mayor, you know, we were running, you know, every forum we went to, people would say, what's your economic agenda? You know, as if, you know, we had one. And I looked at him. I said, NAFTA's my agenda. I said, we now sit, if you think about it, in the largest free trade zone in the world. And for a long time, Dallas sort of always felt like our geography worked against us. We didn't have, you know, a natural body of water like the Colorado River. Contrary to the TV show, we were not the center of the oil and gas industry, which was Houston and the Gulf Coast. San Antonio, you know, laid claim to hold the history, and the Alamo and River Oak. Dallas was this landlocked city up north. But by then, we also had this incredible asset called DFW Airport. And by my rough calculation, if you look at a map or just think in your mind, that airport is 3.5 hours less from every major economic center in North America. It's actually faster to fly to Mexico City in Canada than it is to Los Angeles and New York or Washington. And I saw that as an incredible opportunity for us to make, as I articulated then, Dallas the capital city of NAFTA. And so one of the things we did was really harness the resource of DFW Airport to sell and promote Dallas as a great place for people who wanted to do business, not only in Texas, but in North America. And if you look at what's happening with our Texas economy now, it's happening in the major areas, and I'm proud to say it's Dallas and Houston, but it's happening because of Bush Intercontinental Airport and DFW Airport. All commerce has always been around a port. And in the last century, it was three seaports, then it was trains, now it's airports and it's data ports. And Dallas was privileged to have the last great airport built in this country, and it's still the anchor for our economic development.
Being an African-American mayor, was there any unrealistic expectations from the African American community when you were elected?
When you're an African American mayor, there are only. What do you mean? Come on, John. There are only unrealistic expectations. But the one thing I did, and at first, you know, the African American community here, they were a little ambivalent to me. You know, I was this kid from Austin. I'd gone to Austin College. I didn't grow up in Dallas at the time. You know, Dallas politics were contact. They were full contact sports, and they
right.
were just full of antipathy between the black and the brown community. And, you know, I was too corporate. I was this downtown corporate lawyer from Austin. But as we kept progressing through the race and people began to realize, you know, this knucklehead might win, the excitement, the enthusiasm in the African-American community was just contagious, but it was also unrealistic. And so one of the things that I would say, and I vowed to try to not have a different message when I spoke to black people than I did anybody else. But, you know, one, the black church has always been the center of our political and cultural and social strength, as we just witnessed, you know, in Charleston and what happened today with that flag coming down. But what I said to black people is, look, I am not non-cognizant of the importance of this race. But I said, I also know how harshly you're going to judge me if I'm not successful. So what I said to people is, don't ask me to make history. Ask me to make a difference. And if I can prove to turn this city around and get Dallas moving again and create energy and keep, you know, bring jobs back to the center city and make our neighborhoods look better and bring economic vitality, then all of us can take pride in the fact that I was privileged to be, as I like to call myself, the fifth first black mayor of Dallas. And I told people, I said, because if I don't do those things, I know y'all are going to say, well, he didn't do any good. And so I was able to get people to buy into the fact that, look, I don't know how to be a black mayor. I do know how to be a really good mayor. And if I'm a really good mayor, we'll all be proud of the fact that I was one of the first, you know, the first blacks to hold that. But I also, John, like to use it as an opportunity to educate people. And I do always remember my father's wisdom that it wasn't just important to be the first, but don't be the last. But him also trying to help me and Sandra and Connie and Lee understand that so much of our being the first was just an accident of history. Because, in fact, we happen to be these first-generation beneficiaries of the civil rights. So I love reminding people that Tom Bradley, Willie Brown, Maynard Jackson, and Emmanuel Cleaver were all either born in or near Dallas. Mm-hmm. And Tom Bradley was born in Calvert, Texas, left here because of Jim Crow and segregation, and went to California, and, as you know, became an Olympic hero and the first black mayor of Los Angeles, California. Maynard Jackson was actually born in Dallas, Texas. His grandfather founded New Hope Baptist Church. They were run out of Dallas by the Klan. And as we know, Maynard went to Atlanta and in the 60s at 34 years old became the youngest and the first black mayor of Atlanta and led that city to an incredible renaissance. And Willie Brown went to California and became the longest tenured and most successful speaker in the history of the California Assembly and later the first black mayor of San Francisco. And my good friend, my brother, Emmanuel Cleaver, was born in Waxahachie, went to Prairie View A&M, but like everybody else, you know, left here because of Jim Crow, moved to Missouri and became the first black mayor of Kansas City. So, you know, that's an honor that I share with each of them, because I know had it not been for Jim Crow and segregation, any of them could have done it.
I know that's right. If you're just joining us, I'm Johnny O. Hanson, Jr., and you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio. And we're speaking with Ambassador Ron Kurt, former mayor of Dallas, Texas, former assistant city attorney of Dallas, Texas, and former secretary of state in Texas.
You got to add, not that I'm looking for it, the only reason you call me ambassador is because I held that rank because I served as U.S. Trade Representative under President Obama.
And that was my next question. Lo and behold, you get a call from Barack Obama, President Barack Obama, to be a part of his cabinet. What was your immediate reaction?
Well, there was only one. Well, one, I was stunned, first of all, that he thought that I had something to offer. But, you know, when a president, if you're privileged to have a relationship with someone who becomes president, as I did with then Senator Obama, there's only one answer.
The Honorable Ron Kurt, former U.S. Trade Ambassador and Dallas, Texas Mayor, and Senior of Counsel in Gissom Dunn Crutcher, LLP. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at jhanson@kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. Remember to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at kut.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O. Hanson, Jr. Thank you for joining us today as we begin our 45th season, and please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.